Muddy Knees Media.
This news just in, listeners. The Athletic is extending its £1 a month offer for all new subscribers, meaning you can get unrivaled analysis and in-depth features from the very best football writers around, plus a brand new breaking news service and ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts for just a quid. This deal won't last forever, though, so don't miss out. Sign up today at theathletic.com/totally.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, it's round two of the Champions League and there's an awful lot to look forward to. They'll be presenting the goal show. Can Barcelona bounce back from the Clásico? Will Bayern make it 14 straight? Can plucky outsiders Shakhtar and Man United repeat their match day one successes? And after putting 13 past Venlo, that is unlucky, what will happen when Ajax visit Atalanta? All that and more in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Listener, hi there. It's Tuesday, the 27th of October. A Champions League Match Day 2 gets underway this evening. And right now, joining us, we have Alvaro Romeo.
Hola.
James Horncastle.
¿Qué tal?
Julien Laurens.
Muy bien.
And Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Oh, hello. Yeah. Yeah. Get that email, eh, Raf? Well, so much to discuss today. Been busy weekends. Got a lot of Champions League action on the way. Let's begin with a quick roundup of what you're going to be chatting about. What are your moments of the week? James?
Well, James, it's got to be the Insigne brothers, no? Playing against each other. Benevento, Napoli, a local derby. Both of them scoring. And yeah, a bit of Gattuso towards the end, fearing that Benevento were going to send a goalkeeper up and score in the stoppage time and deny his team a win. That was definitely my highlight of the weekend.
All right, then. What about you, Jules?
I would go for Atem Ben Arfa, who had a really good game with Bordeaux, only for his second game. Back in France, back in Ligue 1, it's good to see him in that kind of form. They won 2-0 against Nîmes. And I thought there was something about, you know, a bit nostalgic to see him in that kind of form. He's 33 now, of course. He had 6 very average months in La Liga Valladolid last season. And to see him back in that kind of form was really good and refreshing. So, yeah.
Lovely stuff. Rafa, what about you?
My moment of the week, James, was the 4,500 fans at Union Berlin watching the game with masks on, not screaming and singing. That was the condition. So they could only clap or bang pots and other musical instruments. So they spent actually the whole game not saying anything, but using other means to make a noise.
And Alvaro, I guess I don't need to ask you what your big story of the week was.
No, because it is Real Madrid beating Barcelona at Camp Nou 3-1, and all the talks about potential crisis at Real Madrid are over until the next Real Madrid game, because you know how it goes over there. But yeah, it was a very nice and very important victory for them over Barcelona, and I think that the person who embodied what Real Madrid is in comparison to Barcelona is Sergio Ramos, a veteran, experienced player who know which strings he has to pull to win a game, as he did against Barcelona, just getting a penalty from Lenglet and scoring it.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend, brought to you by Paddy Power. Defences may be looking shaky at the moment, but Paddy's offers are rock solid. If one leg of your 4-plus-fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg, online exclusive, no shot bets. T's and C's apply, 18+, begambleaware.org.
Excellent. So, Alvaro, why don't you kick things off then? Saturday afternoon, Real Madrid handing the baton of Spanish giant in crisis to their friends at Barcelona. Sergio Ramos at the start of the show, scoring his 100th goal for Real Madrid by converting his 25th consecutive penalty. He's amazing, isn't he? No wonder everyone loves him.
No, he's an iconic player in Real Madrid. He has been the Spanish captain for a number of years too. And yeah, he's probably the biggest leader in Spanish football at the minute. Funnily enough, you were mentioning the 100 goals that Sergio Ramos has scored in his career. Do you know which former defense duplicates, basically doubles up the goals that Sergio Ramos has scored in his career. Ronald Koeman, the manager of Barcelona, who was also there the other day, he scored more than 200 goals in his career, but that's another story. I think that the game was very important for Real Madrid. They managed to get their act together, and the defeat was very disappointing for Barcelona in this context of reconstruction, because I think that Ronald Koeman was hired for a number of things. He has done some of them. For example, he's fighting the endemic stagnation that Barcelona had for a couple of years. He changed the system. He's trying to play differently. He's given a chance to the youngsters. He wanted a striker that he never got, unfortunately for him. He even wanted Memphis, even though he's not a natural number nine. He wasn't given that. So I think that the defeat has to be on Ronald Koeman a little bit too. He has triggered some changes, but still, I mean, you have to wonder why the team didn't have any tool, psychological or football related, to overcome the goal of Sergio Ramos, because after Ramos scored, Barcelona was knocked out for about 20 minutes. Why the changes came so late and all together, three changes together, and why the team is broken into two tectonic plates, or whatever you call them. The midfield is non-existing. You've got the attacking line, you've got the defense, and nothing yelling it. So those are things that Ronald Koeman have to solve. He's been there for 2 months now, and it's time to ask Ronald Koeman explanations about why those problems that Barcelona has in midfield, he hasn't been able to address them. I think that Miralem Pjanic can be an answer for that. Maybe if he plays instead of Coutinho or Pedri, he will provide a more experienced asset to the midfield. And then I didn't like Ronald Koeman either at the end of the game when he complained about VAR. Well, VAR is not only applied against Barcelona. I would say that basically Sergio Ramos knows how to get the better of VAR, because he's a very clever player, very tricky. And Lenglet, he was a little bit more naive, and he made a penalty that normally the referees don't call in La Liga, and that changed the game completely. Then the 3-1 by Modric just put the game to bed, and Real Madrid got a very important victory.
How would you evaluate Leo Messi's performance? That's now six games against Real without a goal or an assist for the Argentine.
Yeah, and if you see his numbers since the restart of football back in June, they are not very good. I mean, he has scored goals, but mainly in set pieces and mostly penalties. I think he was good for 50, 60 minutes. Very good, I would say. Maybe he wasn't as good as his best ever performances, but still, he was energetic, he was very present, he did a couple of really good dribblings, one of them on Sergio Ramos that Thibaut Courtois managed to save when Messi took a shot. Then maybe Casemiro made a penalty on Lionel Messi in the box. I think that it was a soft one, but still, you never know with the Spanish referees, because there was a very soft penalty in the Granada-Getafe, and it was called very similar to the challenge of Casemiro on Messi. I think that overall he was good, but you also have to start thinking that Messi narrative of he will do everything to win the game for us, it's been gone for a couple of years. I think that he needs his teammates more than ever, and the more he can trust on the likes of Ansu Fati, Dembélé, Griezmann, or whoever surrounds him, the better. So Ansu Fati is definitely one of these associate players that Lionel Messi is finding really refreshing, and I think that he needs more teammates around him that help him more.
He's no Sergio Ramos, for example. Meanwhile, off-field, yet more problems for the Catalan giants after Gerard Piqué called out the club's hierarchy for their treatment of Messi prior to the Clásico. This week, we've also seen the Catalan authorities rejecting Barcelona's appeal to suspend the vote of no confidence in the club president. The club had claimed that it risked the health of their members to have the vote. This is the same club, as Colin Miller points out, that a week ago was requesting that 30,000 fans attend the Champions League game with Ferencváros. So where does this leave us now? This means that the vote of no confidence process is rolling on, Alvaro?
Let's see. This is going to be interesting because, as you say, the regional government said no to Barcelona's demand. At the minute, at the time of the recording of this podcast, the Barcelona board is having a meeting to see whether they can organize a referendum or not. I wouldn't discard any possibility, not even the board resigning, if they cannot organize a referendum on time, because the referendum was supposed to be on the 1st of November, and they say that it's impossible to organize a clean, safe and healthy one now in this pandemic context. So let's see what happens, but maybe after we record this podcast, there are some news about it.
Okay, well, meantime, Wednesday night sees them in Turin taking on Juventus. Juve with one or two problems of their own James Horncastle after their 1-1 draw with Verona. They're lying fifth. They've got 9 points so far, three of which were actually given to them in that whole Napoli affair.
Yeah, they've now drawn three games in a row in Serie A. They fell behind at home to Verona on Sunday night. I thought, as was the case in Crotone, they were a little bit unlucky. In that, in Crotone, for example, Morata hit the post, had a goal disallowed. In this game, he had another goal disallowed. They hit the woodwork twice as well. But you can tell that Juventus are still a work in progress. And, you know, one of the reasons for that, look, it's a challenge that all coaches are facing at the moment. They haven't had a pre-season. They haven't had friendlies for players to get to know each other better, particularly the new players. Pirlo's trying something that is drastically different from what went before, not only with Maurizio Sarri, but also Allegri, Conte as well. And they're still without some key players. Now, you know, even without the likes of Cristiano Ronaldo, who at the time of recording, still positive for COVID-19, without the suspended Federico Chiesa, De Ligt, Chiellini, Bonucci, who went off in this game injured. And that's going to be a blow for Barcelona because De Ligt hasn't been cleared to play after shoulder surgery. Chiellini's unlikely to be fit. Bonucci had a scan this morning. We'll have to see how he does. So, yeah, it means that there's going to be a very makeshift defence for Juventus against Barcelona. But I think, given all these circumstances and what Pirlo's trying to do, maybe this slow start that we're seeing from Juventus, where there are flashes of really interesting stuff, is to be expected.
A couple of questions quickly from listeners. Mastrilli, maths tutor, for all your maths needs, asked, do you think Andrea Pirlo has improved this Juventus? And Curran says, is Pirlo getting a free pass this season, or is he actually expected to win something? Are the club still working on bringing in either Zizou or Poch? Because at the moment, they are not great to watch.
Well, I think they are better to watch than under Maurizio Sarri, when they were like watching paint dry for much of last season. And I think Pirlo is trying to do something that is, you know, very different in the way this team builds up. You know, plays this kind of 3-2-5. It's very attacking, very fluid, almost too much so at times, because that leaves Juventus too open. And I think that's one of the reasons why they've conceded, you know, in all but two of their games against Sampdoria and Dynamo Kiev. You know, in terms of, is this a free pass? No, I don't think any Juventus coach gets a free pass. You are expected to win at Juventus. It doesn't matter who you are, what experience you've got, what your status is. You know, Juventus want to win a 10th consecutive league title. They want to win the Champions League. It's something that, you know, Pirlo has said is a stated aim. Sarri always used to say that was utopia, which didn't particularly go down well. You know, it was maybe a little bit more realistic. But I think, yeah, as we saw last year with Sarri, winning things is important to Juventus, but also how you handle yourself is important as well. And I think if Pirlo keeps everybody on side, if Pirlo shows that he is making progress and this team has great potential, then they will stand by him. I think ultimately what did for Sarri was the fact that his relationship with certain key players completely deteriorated. And that was the end of that.
Indeed. All right, so this game then on Wednesday, standout fixture, I would say, from match day two. Jules, what do you think? Who's going to win?
I think it's a great... It's a shame, of course, that Cristiano isn't there.
Is he definitely not going to be there?
Well, we can't say at the moment because the virus is in control. You know, he is positive at the time of recording. He needs to test negative at least 24 hours before the game itself. And then he has to undergo a medical as well, because it has to be established what effect the virus has had on his body.
Can they do the medical in Perugia? Is that an option?
No, well, they've got their own bespoke medical facility.
Right, okay.
Juventus, J Medical. And I think in some respects, was this game going ahead in Barcelona, I think he would be already ruled out. I think that the fact that it's in Turin gives them a little bit more time. It allows them to have the medical there and then. Obviously, he would have to travel with the team if they were going to Barcelona. So At the moment, it's very touch and go. Last Thursday, Juventus sent all the paperwork to UEFA to update them on the situation, which you are obliged to do as per UEFA's protocol. If they hadn't done that, he would already be ineligible for this game. I suppose, what was curious was that Weston McKennie, he tested positive after Cristiano. He's already been cleared. He was in the squad to play against Verona, didn't play. And I think that's another thing to consider here is that often when these players are cleared to play 24 hours or whatever it is before a game, they end up not playing because they haven't trained for 2 weeks.
Right, but Ronaldo.
It is Ronaldo, but I think this is very, very touch and go. And, as we've seen at Juventus over the course of the last 6 months, Dybala, for example, took 46 days to test negative. It varies from person to person how long or how short this period of being positive is.
Yeah, for sure. Jules, sorry.
Yeah, no, I don't think Barcelona can defend. And I think Juventus with the makeshift defense of probably Demiral, Cuadrado and Danilo, which is a joke of a defense, I think it should be quite fun. We should easily see like a 4-3 win for someone. And I like what I saw from Dybala against Verona. I think he looked really sharp and in great form. So, I don't know. I would say a 3-3 draw, but you almost guaranteed goals.
I wouldn't be surprised about that. And following on what Jules is saying, Gerard Piqué is out of the game as well. And he's probably the most important defender at Barcelona. And Philippe Coutinho is out as well. This is a blessing in disguise, perhaps, for Ronald Koeman, because as I said before, he can lead the way to Miralem Pjanic, the former Juventus player. I believe that Pjanic can be important at this Barcelona, considering how inconsistent they are. But yes, they don't defend very well, that's for sure.
Well, Real Madrid, who beat Barcelona at the weekend, will be in action on Tuesday, meanwhile. And we'll get on to that with the rest of the Tuesday action after this.
It's the start of lockdown 2 out there, listeners, so grab your currywurst, dust up your lederhosen and fire up the umpar band. Thank you. Because it's Oktoberfest and our friends at Beer 52 want to celebrate the world's biggest beer festival by giving all Totally listeners a free case of 8 German craft beers. All you have to do is head to beer52.com/football and cover the cost of shipping, which is a mere £5.95. Beer 52, as you all know by now, are beer pioneers, and they've visited the finest small batch breweries in Germany to bring you ABK 6% Weissbier, Buro Brauerei's Weizen, Lemke's Spree Coast German IPA, and many, many more. Most of these beers have never, ever been seen in the UK, and with Brexit round the corner, well, it's unlikely you'll ever see them again. You can choose a light, dark, or mixed case, and the best thing with Beer 52 is that there's absolutely no minimum commitment. If you want, you can just take this free case, try the beers, and if you decide it's not for you, you can pause or cancel your subscription at any time. So head to beer52.com/football and get your free case of 8 craft beers today. That's the word beer and the number 52.com/football. One last time, beer52.com/football for Oktoberfest. On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Tuesday, Champions League action gets underway with the champions themselves, Bayern Munich. They're on a 13-game winning streak in this competition. They are making the trip to Russia, to Lokomotiv Moscow. A fresh Rafa from a 5-0 win at the weekend over Eintracht Frankfurt. Woof. Another 3 goals for Robert Lewandowski, who's now got 10 goals in his first 5 Bundesliga matches of the season.
Yeah, I mean, he's just been unstoppable once more. Frankfurt, not perhaps the best defensive side Bayern will meet, but we saw what he did against Atletico, who in theory should be, one of the tougher teams to play against. There's something that seems to have clicked for Bayern over the last 8 days or so. They started a little bit slowly. They had that 4-1 defeat at Hoffenheim, but somehow that rhythm has been refound, and they've played some of the best football actually in 2020 of the last 3 games, which doesn't bode well for the competition in Germany, and maybe puts them in a decent position for the Champions League as well, although things can change until May, as we know. But yeah, it's been really good from Bayern. The only negative is the injury to Alphonso Davies, who only 2 minutes into the game against Eintracht Frankfurt slipped, went over his ankle and ruptured a ligament and will be out for 2 months. Bearing in mind that Bayern don't have a lot of cover in these positions, it does put a lot of strain on Lucas Hernandez, who doesn't want to play there necessarily either. So that is the one problem, if you want, that Bayern have. But apart from that, their performances have been hugely impressive.
Archer in Tup pointing out that Lewandowski has now scored more on his own in this Bundesliga season than every other Bundesliga side apart from Dortmund and Leipzig.
The only team that is keeping pace with Bayern for scoring goals is Sassuolo.
Right. Sassuolo, what about Ajax? Are they not?
Well, that's not top five league, is it?
All right. Okay. Sassuolo, indeed. All right. Bayern on that incredible run. And you think it should be reasonably plain sailing for them, Rafa, away in Moscow?
I think so. It's tough to see anyone who's not quite at the real height of European football being able to resist this Bayern team. The only problem I might foresee is if Bayern, for some reason, take this as a given and underestimate Lokomotiv. But it's been a hallmark of this team that they don't tend to do that, with the exception of the Hoffenheim game, perhaps. So I think Bayern should be okay for 3 points tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Also from that group, Atletico Madrid, who Bayern beat 4-0. In their opening game of the group stage, will be taking on Red Bull Salzburg, who had a 2-2 draw with Lokomotiv a week ago. Also from the Bundesliga in Champions League action, Borussia Mönchengladbach on Tuesday are going to be hosting Real Madrid. Their first meeting, excitingly, since the 1985 UEFA Cup last 16, which famously Borussia Mönchengladbach, managed in those days by Jupp Heynckes, won 5-1 in the opening leg in Germany.
Jetzt läuft die Angriffsmaschine der Borussia. Hannes Pass, Kriens, Tor! Super! Uwe Rahn!
But then lost the return leg 4-0 in Madrid and went out on away goals. Mönchengladbach have never qualified from the group in their two previous appearances. They looked good, though, at San Siro a week ago.
Yeah, they did. They very nearly got a win. Perhaps it would have been slightly fortunate, but they were well worth the point. And you know, this is a team that has not really played regularly against the likes of Inter, a very good Inter side. So, yeah, very, very encouraging to see them, you know, progress to the point that they can compete with Inter. And I think if you can push Inter all the way, there's absolutely no reason why this dysfunctional Madrid team might not be vulnerable as well.
Right.
They didn't look so good defensively against Mainz. They conceded 2 goals, but then made a few changes and actually had a lot of depth on the bench, and then once again found a way of winning the game. So a really good week for Gladbach, all told. And I've got a slight suspicion that they might do something special against Real Madrid.
I mean, they were very clinical against Inter. I mean, 2 shots on target, 2 goals, one of which was a penalty. The other came from that quite remarkable pass that James compared with Kaká for Crespo.
Because it was Kaká-esque. It really was. Go, at the time, everyone was horrified, and I understand that. We're disturbing some sacred legends with this. But if you look at the ball, I don't know if he meant it in the same way that Kaká clearly did. But in terms of the distance, the vision that it implied, I think it's not beyond the realms of comparison anyway.
Anyway, James, if... Yes? Gladbach scored 2 goals against Inter in 2 shots on target. That's more terrifying than anything for Real Madrid, because the quality of this group is really high. I mean, Inter, Shakhtar, Borussia, Mönchengladbach, they are all very good. And whoever has a deep in form, and a deep in form that lasts only 2 weeks, is going to be in trouble. And I think that this game is, for Real Madrid, much more important than El Clásico in long term, because if they lose now in Germany, they'll be in real trouble, and I don't think that they'll be able to revert the situation. They will find it very difficult.
Really? They're only 1 point behind at the moment, because Mönchengladbach and Inter shared the points in the opening game at San Siro. But as you say, if they're not careful, it could go very awry. Shakhtar and Inter will be facing each other, meantime, on Tuesday. They met 2 months ago. How did that go, James?
Very well for Inter. They were really impressive. It was the Europa League semi-final. Lukaku scored, and to be honest, Lukaku hasn't stopped scoring since then. This season, he scored in all but one of his 8 games for club and country. He has gone to an altogether different level. I think he's reached a kind of stage of maturity now where he's not just scoring goals, but he's leading the team. He takes the team on his back. Inter go to Ukraine in a precarious position. If they lose this, they're going to go into that doubleheader against Real Madrid with 1 point, which is an unenviable position to find themselves in. Conte was keen to point out that in the Gladbach game that they dominated possession. They had 17 shots to Gladbach's 6, and they didn't have Hakimi. You know, and Hakimi has been pretty key for them since they signed him from Dortmund. He was ruled out at 5 p.m. on that match day, and all of a sudden they had to completely reconfigure around that. Ashley Young, for example, was still positive for COVID-19 at the time, another one of their options down that side. They'd sold Candreva. So that was an issue. They'll have him back for this game against Shakhtar. But I suppose of all the teams that were decimated by COVID-19 in their first match week of the Champions League, it was Shakhtar, and it didn't matter. They still managed to beat Real Madrid. So it'll be an interesting game, this.
Certainly will. Just going back to Real Madrid's game away in Mönchengladbach, some important team news. Alvaro.
Yes, of course. Let's see how fit he is, but... Eden Hazard is in the squad to play in Germany. He's got the match fitness, at least, but he hasn't played since the beginning of August. And if the game is hard for Real Madrid, I expect him to play a few minutes. And really, it's a mystery to everybody how his fitness is going to be, because there have been some pictures of Eden Hazard just a little bit overweight. And of course, this hasn't been the first injury that he has suffered at Real Madrid. Has been the third or the fourth, but yeah, he's back in the match day squad.
Excellent. All right. Well, quick look at some of the other games coming up on Tuesday. Manchester City are visiting Marseille, while Liverpool host Midtjylland from the ever fascinating Group D, which also features Atalanta and Ajax. We'll come back to that in a second. But Marseille, Jules, who had a bad start to their Champions League campaign with defeat away to Olympiacos, what are their prospects here?
So they won at the weekend, at least on Friday, on Saturday, at Lorient, which was a good win for them in difficult conditions with the wind and the rain and everything. And what I find the most interesting is that Dimitri Payet was suspended, was not there. So they played in a different formation with the diamond midfield, with Michael Cuisance, the former Bayern Munich midfielder, playing behind Thauvin and Benedetto, the two strikers, if you want. And I thought that worked really well. I thought he played like that the week before, and they won at Bordeaux. The balance of the team was right. I thought they were really strong collectively too. And I just wonder if the issue maybe is Payet in the end. We saw against Olympiacos that he had a terrible game and just had no influence at all on the game. And be interesting to see what AVB does against City, because Payet would be available for him, and you know what kind of formation he goes for. He said that they were preparing and working on something to counter a City, and we asked him in his press conference today, would you look at what Lyon did, for example, in the Champions League? And he goes, you can't ask a Marseille manager to get inspiration from a Lyon game, which I thought was obviously a very good answer, considering the rivalry between the two Olympics. So, but it'd be very interesting, and like you said, they have to do something, otherwise qualifying for the last 16 would be even harder. But when you look at City and the way they're playing, and they're not in great form either, maybe Marseille have a chance. It's just a shame there's no fans there, because this is clearly the kind of game against the City team a bit, you know, in with doubt and not in great form. This is kind of game at the Velodrome, if you had the whole 60,000 people that would really play the sort of 12-man role, and it's a real shame they're not there. But
No Aguero, we're also not there. No Gabriel Jesus, no Fernandinho. So a good time perhaps to be taking on Definitely. Man City, who this, I think, might be Andre Villas-Boas' first encounter with since he went to the Etihad as Spurs manager 3 weeks before getting fired by Tottenham and lost 6-0. Of course, that was a different City as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. And I guess it was a different AVB. I think a lot of things have happened to him since that defeat. You know, he
Dakar rally.
Football. Then he went to something completely different. You know, I don't I don't know if he went into Rally thinking that he will ever come back to this kind of level as a manager or not. He always said that he doesn't want to manage for too long anyway. So, but yeah, it's definitely, I feel that he's recently a better manager now than he was back then. He's obviously more mature and older and all of that. I think tactically he's better than he was then. And I do think that he would relish this chance against Pep, against City, to bring a bit of life into the match. I think he was really disappointed by the game against Olympiacos and by the performance. He took the blame, but I think he knew that the players really didn't do him any favours either. So it'd be very interesting game.
Why doesn't he want to manage for too long? It's only just down the road.
Because it's a rugby city, you know. So
okay.
He might find it hard to manage rugby.
Fair enough. Group D, Liverpool hosting Michelin. And in that group, Atalanta hosting Ajax. Any thoughts on Liverpool Midtjylland, anybody? James, you saw them in action against Atalanta.
I did. They weren't able to muster all that much, I must say. They had a couple of opportunities from set pieces, which, given that they were already 3-0 down after half an hour, tricky for them to come back. Isn't Liverpool's throw-in coach from not hail from Midtjylland?
Thomas Grønmark, I don't think he works for them anymore, but I think he worked for Ajax as well. So that's basically his Champions League group.
Crazy. All right. Well, that's what's going to be going on at Anfield. Elsewhere, Atalanta in that group hosting Ajax. Ajax narrowly beaten by Liverpool last Wednesday, but managing to bounce back this weekend by scraping to a narrow win over VVV Venlo. 13-0. Let's hear more about that with our pal Mikael Jongsma. Mikael, thanks so much for joining us. This weekend, then, a routine Eredivisie clash between Ajax and mid-table VVV Venlo. When did you twig that this was going to be something quite different?
Well, at first, I wasn't too convinced this would be a spectacular game at all. And at that time, it was probably not the most attractive game in the time slot as well, with some games going on elsewhere. But yeah, in the first half, Ajax were quite dominant. VVV didn't really seem up for it. And it was quite an easy 4-0 halftime score. But still, like, this could be more of a Bayern kind of dominance win rather than something like truly extraordinary that we haven't seen for the ages. But yeah, when the red card fell for Christian Kum after 50 minutes, the floodgates went open, and from that point on, Ajax meant business, and they never really stopped after.
Right, so they scored another 9 goals in the second half. In total, there were 45 shots for Ajax. Lassana Traore, Bertrand Traore's cousin, of course, Villavant, scoring 5. Just remarkable. The difference between this and the Liverpool game obviously lies to an extent in the quality of the opponents, but did something happen between the two games to unleash this kind of preternatural force of goal scoring?
Well, to an extent, Lassina Traore happened, of course, because he wasn't in the starting lineup against Liverpool. But to be completely honest, I don't think anyone expected this kind of performance from him. He got 5 goals and 3 assists. I think in the summer there were rumors of him being loaned out because he doesn't really feel like an Eredivisie-ready striker yet. But, well, this performance might have changed minds here and there. But the funny thing is, I mean, he's been involved in 8 goals, and he's not even a sure starter for the next game for Ajax. And it kind of tells you both how ridiculous that game was, but also the kind of depth that Ajax have at this point.
Mm. The previous game, meanwhile, Mikael, what was the reaction to that in the Netherlands, the 1-0 defeat at home to Liverpool?
Very much a missed opportunity in this case. I think a lot of people felt that Ajax edged the first half. Of course, they were the only one to score, but it was in the wrong goal. And the second half, they looked a bit blunt and a bit uninspired, really. I think the main criticism has been that there wasn't really a plan B in that second half. It kind of went, we'll throw the kitchen sink at Liverpool and see what happens. And that was quite easy for Liverpool to defend too. But yeah, I think for Ajax, this next game against Atalanta feels like a make or break game in terms of Champions League survival. Although, to be fair, the Michelin result against Atalanta gives them hope to at least survive in European competition this winter.
Right. Of the last seven group stage appearances, they've only made it out to the last 16 once, Ajax. In terms of players available, Lassina Traore presumably is now going to be in the squad for the trip to Bergamo. What about Anthony?
Anthony is expected to be there as well. Klaasjan Huntelaar isn't, so the old wily fox who kind of fits that Serie A narrative won't be available, but very exciting, Brian Brobbey is there. Young talent has been lighting up the young Ajax team this season. Very complete striker and definitely one to keep an eye on as well.
Give us the name again.
Brian Brobbey.
Okay.
Yeah, he was the one, Mikael, who I would say people were more excited about going into the season than Lassina Traore, in part because he's been the front man for Holland under 19 sides that have won the European Championships, for example, beating the Italy of Moise Kean and Nicolo Zaniolo.
Yeah, absolutely. And that age group in general, in terms of strikers, just has ridiculous depth. In terms of attacking talent, the Dutch have something to look forward to. But to be fair, Burkina Faso have as well, going by this weekend's result.
Including for young Dutch talent, Ruud Gullit's son, who featured in last Thursday's Europa League victory for AZ Alkmaar away in Naples.
Yeah, and that for me is one of the most baffling things in general. Not so much that Maxime Gullit is a talented footballer, given his genes. His mother is a niece of the late Johan Cruyff. His dad is Ruud Gullit, so he's bound to be a superstar nonetheless. But the fact that AZ they can't get a win, even if they, whatever they do at this point in the league, they actually drew VVV last week 2-2. Apparently it's easier to grind out a result against the second place Serie A team Napoli for them than it is against VVV. So the Eredivisie is quite a rare league in general.
Yeah. What was the explanation, do you think, James, from a Napoli perspective for that performance?
Well, they dominated for the best part of an hour of that game, but their domination was sterile for the most part of it. They didn't create all too many problems for AZ. I thought the goal scorer, De Witt, played very well for AZ. Not someone who seems to stand out in anything, but seemed to be like a 6 out of 10 in everything. And was quite frustrating for them, not only in the goal that he scored, but just his all-round play. I thought they it was one of those games where I felt that AZ just came up and had a game plan that was quite simple, stuck to it, and Napoli just got more and more frustrated. They're up against it now, because their next game in this group is going to be against Real Sociedad. Probably the team that they went into that group thinking they're the ones that are going to rival us, or at least maybe AZ would look at Real Sociedad and say, look, that's the team that we have to be competing with to finish second. Because I think most people, certainly on the form that Napoli have shown in Serie A, would be saying that Napoli should win this group.
AZ off to a terrific start then, and they'll be hosting, meanwhile, Rijeka of Croatia. Mikael, thank you so much for joining us. Look forward to more exciting updates from the Eredivisie and its teams soon.
Bye, James.
Mikael Jongsma. Alvaro, Real Sociedad, still top of La Liga, by the way.
Yeah, defending this position, which is... they are the first team that they have defended the leadership in this 2020-21 La Liga season. And they are doing very well. They managed to beat 4-1 Huesca with a really good display from Mikel Oyarzabal. And I would like to single out as well David Silva, because he gave two assists. And one of them was so good that even the goal scorer didn't expect it. Porto, you can see that... A second before he scored, he was still looking for the ball that was perfectly timed and passed to him, but he didn't know where the ball was coming from. Silva was played really well. I think that it was important for Real Sociedad that Isak, the Swedish striker, scored too, because he can be one of those differential players as well. And yeah, Real Sociedad, they are still topping the table. In the Europa League, they started in the right foot, beating Rijeka easily. And I think that the game against Napoli is going to be one of the good ones, because Napoli will know the threat that they can that they can mean. The game at the Real Arena is going to be very interesting to see if Real Sociedad are up for it as well in the European stage. And another word about Oyarzabal, if I may. I mean, he's incredible. He's only 23 years old. By the way, yesterday was the 5th anniversary of his debut in La Liga. By the way, it was David Moyes who gave him the chance. And he has scored 12 penalties out of 12 in La Liga. He has scored already more than 50 goals for Real Sociedad. And this is quite impressive. This player, I think that he's got all the future ahead of him. And this is one of the players that probably this summer is going to be very coveted by all the European teams. Because Oyarzabal is young, he's good, he's quick, and he can score.
Brilliant. And James just returned to the Atalanta-Ajax game. What of the Bergamaschi, who had the 4-0 win over Midtjylland last midweek, prior to that had been defeated by Napoli and got beaten at home this time around by Sampdoria, the back-to-back league defeats. What's going on?
Well, what's going on is that they had Ajax on the brain going into this match. They made 7 changes. And as I was saying with Andrea Pirlo and Juventus, yeah, Gasperini hasn't had a pre-season to drill his ideas into the new players. Those new players haven't had friendlies to get to know their new teammates. So he looked at Samp, he thought, well, I'm going to try our new wing-backs, Modica and Di Paoli. Modica gave away a penalty. Di Paoli was hooked fairly soon afterwards, I think at the beginning of the second half. Sam Lammers, who has scored from the bench, already a couple of goals started, but you could see he wasn't on the same wavelength as Papu Gomez. And despite dominating possession, you know, they kept crashing against the rocks of that Samp defence. Claudio Ranieri, who called his players cowards after that 3-0 defeat to Pirlo's Juventus on the opening day, and then they went and lost, I think, to Benevento, have won 3 straight. They've beaten some good sides as well. The Lazio team, for example, that beat Dortmund in midweek, have beaten Fiorentina away from home. They've beaten, obviously, Atalanta away from home. And it was Ranieri's birthday last week, and he got to celebrate by beating Gasperini again, because I think they've met 9 times now, and he is Gasperini kryptonite because he's won 6 of them.
Wow. They're up in 7th place now, Sampdoria. Level on points with Atalanta, who are just ahead of them on goal difference, as you might expect, them being Atalanta. Brilliant. We'll hear more about Serie A, Milan being on top and all that kind of thing, and that Benevento-Napoli game a little bit later on. But next up, on to Wednesday's action in the Champions League, which features such delights as Chelsea in Russia and Man United against the Bundesliga leaders RB Leipzig.
At Paddy Power, we know competition for the remote control can be fierce at the weekends. So, in order to give the non-football-loving occupants of your house something to do, here are some of our top suggestions. Go for a walk. Walk the dog. Walk to the shops. Go cycling. Cycle the dog. Recycle the dog. Just go! All very good options, we say. And that's not the only one. If one leg of your 4-plus-fold acca lets you down, get a free bet on all football leagues and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10, min odds 1 to 5 on each leg, online exclusive, exclude shop bets, T's and C's apply, 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
The Totally Football Shows and The Athletic are delighted to be supporting Football Aid for the months of October and November. Bid now at footballaid.com to get your hands on some incredible football memorabilia, including signed shirts from Steven Gerrard, Gianluca Vialli, Gareth Bale and even Peter Crouch's boots. Find out more, get bidding and support the cause at footballaid.com.
Raphael Honigstein, it's tied at the top of the Bundesliga, the top 3 separated by just 1 point. But in first place, RB Leipzig, and off to an absolute flyer. 6 wins in 7 in all competitions, 4 straight victories, and taking on Man United this midweek. Your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts are that I think they have a chance against Man United. It's perhaps not the ideal opposition, because Leipzig would prefer a team that has more of the ball and plays a bit more freely. United themselves are best on the counter-attack, of course, but Leipzig collectively look very strong. They have Marcel Sabitzer coming back, the captain. He had a 20-minute cameo where he very nearly scored a goal and then converted a penalty that gave Leipzig the 2-1 win against Hertha. 10-man Hertha at that point. Zafoik had been sent off. But yeah, this is a good Leipzig team, and this is a Leipzig team that perhaps is still improving relative to the Leipzig team that we saw last year going to the semi-final. So I spoke to Marcel Sabitzer about a week ago, for an interview in The Athletic, and he seemed very confident without being in any shape or form dismissive of United. There was a sense that Leipzig are not in fear of any team in Europe at the moment, and I think they're at least good for a point.
Well, they made it all the way to the semi-finals a couple of months ago in the end of last season's competition. They got this one underway with a 2-0 victory over Turkish champions Başakşehir. Lovely brace from Angelino on loan from Man City. So this will be a special game for him. Jules, you were at Old Trafford this Saturday. Did you have fun?
Yeah, I was. You know what? Everybody said it was a bad game. Everybody, even in the stadium, like our friend Ian Hervin, for example, who was there with me. And I don't know, I liked it. I liked the intensity. I liked the fact that I saw Cavani in a red shirt and Thiago Silva in a blue shirt that were not PSG shirts. I liked that they faced each other and Thiago marked Cavani for the last half an hour or something. There was a lot of intensity. Of course, Chelsea went there to defend and United were not very good going forward anyway without Pogba. But I thought there was a lot of very interesting things tactically. When Pogba came on, I was hoping that Solskjaer would play a front two of Rashford and Cavani, but that didn't happen. There was a lot of good stuff, I thought, but I was the only one. So maybe I'm the problem.
Okay, maybe it was the fact that they come off that magnificent result in Paris. But Rafa, the way that Leipzig play, the chances of Man United being able to pull the same tactical trick again?
Yeah, there is a chance. I mean, Leipzig under Nagelsmann want to have the ball. They're much more of a possession side. They're not that good if they play deep and try to counter-attack. They tried against PSG. It didn't really work in the semi-final. So they have to play the natural game, and United are quite happy to play on the break. So it's not a straightforward proposition. But I just think collectively, Leipzig tactically are on a much higher level than this United team. United still have superb players, and Leipzig are very wary of that. But I think in terms of, you know, comparing teams who are coached well and know what they're doing on the pitch, I think Leipzig are far superior, but that might not be enough.
Jens, I was covering the game as well this Saturday, the Manchester United-Chelsea. Well, Manchester United is in their worst ever run of form in the Premier League. They haven't won 5 games in the competition at home successively, which is something that didn't happen for a long time now, maybe 30 years or so. And at the same time, you get the feeling that if Manchester United sparks, or if they have any surprise factor, it has to come from an individuality. But in Leipzig, it's different. I mean, the players change positions a lot. As Rafael was saying, Nagelsmann is probably a much more complex manager than Solskjaer. And also in Leipzig, 10 players have scored at least one goal this season, which tells you that the positions are not that fixed in that team. A player like Angelino, for example, he can break into the box and score a beautiful goal, as he did in the previous week in the Champions League. So I think that there is a complexity in Leipzig that Manchester United cannot match at all.
Okay. Wow, sounds like that's going to be a tough game on Wednesday. Chelsea, meanwhile, the other half of Saturday's Thrill Fest, will be off in Krasnodar early on Wednesday. Jules, would you like to preview this one for us?
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think Krasnodar will have a couple of players back, especially Rémi Cabella, the French playmaker. I think Chelsea, the idea very much has been to work on that defensive shape that we saw, the 0-0 against Sevilla, the 0-0 against United again. And I would expect them to play once again with a back five, even if Krasnodar doesn't bring the same threat as United or Sevilla. But it'd be very interesting to see, I think, what Lampard does. I was, again, you know, I watched a lot of Kai Havertz on Saturday and Timo Werner. Timo Werner didn't really look that happy the way they were playing. And unless you find a way of giving him some service, finding Havertz, they will always struggle going forward, I think, because Pulisic can't do everything on his own, neither can Werner or Havertz. So I don't know if the answer is to try something a bit different, maybe have two strikers up front, one with Werner and then maybe Havertz as a number 10 behind. I don't know what Lampard has to do, but they certainly should do much better going forward than what we've seen in the last two games.
Rafa, have you got any view on the way that Havertz has been used so far?
Well, I think there was always a danger, James, that Havertz's best game with the ball, a possession game, a game with lots of reference points around him, is not what this Chelsea team are at the moment. That might be the destination. That might be where Lampard ultimately wants to take them. But right now, Chelsea, in my view, are best when they can be quick, when they play in transition, when they can go wide, and then traffic can bypass Havertz a little bit. So I don't think it's necessarily a case of how he's being used, is that what he's best at and what Chelsea are best at right now is perhaps not quite on the same wavelength. And I think it's not a total surprise that it perhaps needs a bit more time for both sides to learn how to live with each other.
Mm. Chelsea in Group E, where it's as you were, because they all drew last week. Chelsea, of course, goalless with Sevilla. And Krasnodar sharing the points away at Rennes. So very much wide open, this group. Sevilla will be hosting Rennes this time around. They lost to Eibar in the Liga this weekend. Rennes also lost in Ligue 1 against Angers. What kind of game is this going to be, do you think, Sevilla-Rennes?
Well, I think that Sevilla is having a real problem with the scoring. From the tactical point of view, they are doing many things right, but then, you know, it comes to the point when you need somebody to tap it in, and Sevilla doesn't have at the minute that option is not working for them. They haven't scored a single goal in the last three games, and you have to start, you know, putting a question tag over, for example, in a Serie, a player who has been involved in very heavy misses lately, even against Eibar, and I remember against Bayern as well. All that said, I think that Sevilla at home should be favorite for this game, and let's see if Jules Koundé can be part of the squad. So far, he hasn't been cleared from his COVID-19, but there is still, according to Sevilla reporters, that there is still a chance that he can make it to the squad. I think it's very unlikely, but he will, of course, improve the team. And yeah, Sevilla, if they get a win this time, I think that they will be in course to qualify for the next round.
Okay. Well, after this, let's touch on one or two of the other Wednesday games, which feature Paris Saint-Germain, Dortmund and Lazio too.
I don't know about you, listener, but these days, you know, when you're doom-scrolling through the news on Twitter, or you're just bewildered by who Man United haven't signed this week, or you're swiping through your dating apps, yes, apps, plural, it can be pretty hard to find the hours in the day to sit down and just learn more. And if you think you don't have the time to develop yourself, you need to check out Blinkist. Blinkist is for anyone who's time poor but wants to be knowledge rich. The app takes the key insights from over 3,000 non-fiction bestsellers and gathers them together in 15-minute blinks, which are text and audio explainers that help you understand more about the core ideas. 12 million people are already using Blinkist to deepen their knowledge in areas like personal growth, management, leadership, mindfulness, and happiness, and I am one of them. I like to get my daily walks in, and recently I've been listening to the very excellent and influential Think Fast and Slow by Daniel Kahneman. And next up is Mark Manson's New York Times bestseller, The Subtle Art of Not Giving a F***. You'd hope that one of those two will help me live my best life. Now, because you listen to The Totally Football Show, Blinkist want to give you a free 7-day trial and 25% off their premium membership. All you need to do is head to blinkist.com/athletic. That's blinkist.com/athletic. Come on, what are you waiting for? Take out your 7-day trial today and get 25% off at blinkist.com/athletic. Blinkist, big ideas in small packages.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Paris Saint-Germain, has there been much fallout from them losing at home to Man United in Paris? They had a 4-0 win against Dijon at the weekend with a brace for Moise Kean and one for Mbappe as well. How's the mood?
So the mood wasn't great at all the few days after the United defeat, where the pressure was back on Tuchel, of course, where, you know, we looked deep into how bad collectively they were, what happened between that team that played so much as a team in the final eight and the one that didn't play as a team at all on Tuesday against United. So yeah, there was a lot of negativity around it, and rightly so, because they were really shocking on the night. The win at the weekend against Dijon didn't change anything, really. I think it's the fourth year in a row that Dijon lose 4-0 in Paris. So there's nothing new there. What was funny about the game was that Thomas Tuchel played Marquinhos in midfield and Danilo Pereira at centre back. Yeah. So Thomas Tuchel has asked all summer for a centre back. He really pushed for Rudiger. Leonardo, the PSG sporting director, kept saying, like, you don't need a centre-back, and certainly not Rudiger, even on loan. Tuchel can't do anything. Then Danilo arrives, who is a pure number six, like a proper holding midfielder, a very good one, I think, as well. And yet, first league game of the season when Danilo is starting, Tuchel puts him as centre back and move Marquinhos up to midfield, and saying to us after the game, well, Marquinhos is the heart of this team. You know, everything goes through him. He's normally plays in midfield. And you think like, what are you doing? Why are you winding up people like this? Why are you winding up Leonardo like this? Why are you doing that to him? You know, they had a clash 3 weeks ago. They sort of made friends again, and now they clash again because clearly that was a message and a sign, you know, sent to Leonardo, saying, look, I do what I want. This is maybe not my club, this is your club, but I do what I want. If I want to put Marquinhos in midfield and a midfielder at the back, I can do that. I can do whatever I want. And it was just funny. It's like a school playground.
Well, they'll be off in Istanbul on Wednesday, Paris Saint-Germain. Quick word for Lyon, who meanwhile this weekend notched up a whopping 4-1 win over Monaco, where things are starting to go wrong for Niko Kovac. He's lost 4 of his last 5 league matches. Good stuff from Lyon, though.
Yeah, they were 4-0 up at halftime with 26% of possession. It was exactly what we expected. Monaco played and played quite well for that first half, created the biggest chances at 0-0, and then they got absolutely done on the counter 4 times, and that was it. It was fascinating to watch. Well done to Lyon, although all the games won't be that easy. And Monaco, you have to feel for their sort of naivety in a way, and you see what Kovac tried to do, and there was a lot of good things. It's just like, you know, they were done so easily by just a few counter-attacking moves, but yeah.
Okay, let's finish off with a quick look at Group F from Wednesday's Champions League action, where Bruges will be hosting Lazio and Borussia Dortmund take on Zenit St. Petersburg. Dortmund fresh from a whopping 3-0 win in the Revier derby against Schalke. Rafa.
They played really well, James. They played like a team that was embarrassed about their non-performance against Lazio and used poor Schalke as a lightning rod for all that aggression and anger. And it begged the question, why can't they play like that all the time? And the finger always points at Lucien Favre. Of course, also points at the team. But ultimately, the team is the responsibility of the coach. And people just have a really hard time understanding why Dortmund sometimes just don't turn up at all. Lazio was one of those games. The Schalke game was the opposite. Of course, Schalke were very poor position and not able to live on the same planet as Dortmund were concerned, footballistically speaking. But there is, I think, hope, or at least a bit of optimism, that this much more angry, aggressive Dortmund playing in a 4-3-3, which is Lucien Favre's preferred system, can maybe take a bit of that pressing and a bit of that commitment that they've shown and take that forward into the next few games, because the personnel is there to play really well.
What is that now for Schalke? Is it 21 Bundesliga games without a win?
Yeah.
Not good. Well, that's it for Wednesday's action. In a second or two, let's answer one or two of your questions and touch a little bit on Thursday night's fun in the Europa League.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is the Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
James, let's talk about the Insigne brothers and their role in Napoli's 2-1 win away at Benevento.
Yeah, they came up against each other for the first time. I think they had actually played together briefly 7 years ago when Roberto Insigne came on for Mary Kamsic.
How old's Roberto? Is he younger?
So Roberto is younger by, I think, 3 years. And he scored the opening goal in this local derby between Benevento and Napoli. And you could see how much it meant to him when he went down and I think shed a few tears. And after the game, he said, I've got nothing against the city. I've got nothing against Neapolitans. I was born and raised there. Obviously, I love my brother. But I really wanted to score against the club that just didn't believe in me. He was let go. He had to not start at the bottom of the Italian football pyramid. But I think one of the strange ironies is that it was Napoli's current sporting director, Giuntoli, who discovered him playing in some random game, which I think Roberto Insigne's side lost 7 or 8-2, probably playing Ajax or something. and brought him to Carpi. Carpi went up from the third division to the second division to the first division. But as has been the case throughout his career so far, when he's got promoted with a side, he's been considered a second division player. So, for example, he was part of the Parma team that came up to Serie A a couple of years ago and was then sent back down to the second division, has come up with Benevento. And I think the great thing about this story is that both of them are wingers, but in Lorenzo Insigne's case, he plays on the left and is right-footed. And in Roberto's case, he plays on the right and is left-footed. So they could, in theory, play on the same team. Lorenzo Insigne's goal, the equaliser, was just magnificent. One of the best, I think, in the league that we saw this this weekend, along with Vlad Kirakesh's thunderbolt in the fog for Sassuolo against against Torino. But yeah, Lorenzo Insigne's goal had everything. Outside of the box, weaker foot, hit the bottom of the bar. Did it go in? Didn't it go in? The buzz goes through the referee's watch from GLT technology. I know you love that, Jules.
GLT.
And there you go. It was a nice day for both of them, really.
It's four of them, right? It's four boys, like the Hazards and the Mondondas.
Yeah, yeah. No, there's a full brood of Insignes. But
Insignes.
Well, Napoli move up to third place now in Serie A, level with Sassuolo. Top of the pile, just give a quick heads up, at Milan, who have a big game this evening. So they're top with a game in hand, which is against Roma Monday night. Not this evening for you, listener, of course. Don't know how that one went. Milan did have a terrific win away at Celtic last Thursday. Andrew Lang wants to flag up another Scottish side in Thursday night action, though. Rangers and Kemar Roos' extraordinary strike against Standard Liège. Andrew Lang says, Steven Gerrard said it was the best goal he's ever seen live. I know you were there for Where's Goal, Jimbo. What about everyone else? What's the best goal they've ever seen live? Alvaro.
Yes, this is something that is probably unknown for the general public, but Santi Ezquerro, playing for Athletic de Bilbao, scored a bicycle kick from outside the box against Villarreal, I believe. And this is the best goal I've ever seen live. I recommend everybody to look for it in YouTube.
Okay. Just give us the name again.
Santi Ezquerro. He played for Barcelona for a season, but he was an anonymous player in there.
All right. Rafa.
I was lucky to be there, James, in 2002 when Zinedine Zidane did that famous thing. I don't think I've seen anything since that comes close.
Fair enough. Jules?
It's a hard one. Maybe Olivier Giroud and that scorpion kick with Arsenal against Crystal Palace on New Year's Day.
Very nice.
That was pretty special.
Certainly was. And James Horncastle?
You know, I think one of the best was Deuce Dempsey. That lob, 8 minutes from time against Juventus to cap that incredible, 5-4 win on aggregate that Fulham had. That was just an extraordinary night and I think the best way to finish it off.
I see. Magnificent. All right then, a couple of other questions. Spuds in Water says, when a struggling Premier League player does well in another league like Lukaku, then people say it's a farmers league. How come this accusation doesn't work in reverse? Or do people say the same thing in other countries? With people like James, who is desperate in La Liga and the Bundesliga, but is lighting up the Premier League.
Because it's all down to the ecosystem where you land. As simple as that. I think that Carlo Ancelotti knows how to get the better of James Rodriguez. Mm. And his performance at Real Madrid, it doesn't say anything bad about La Liga or anything good about La Liga. It just talks about James Rodriguez, no more than that. And it applies to every single player, I believe. There have been so many players that in Premier League they were amazing and then they went to La Liga or to Italy and they weren't so.
Also, he wasn't exactly bad at Bayern. He just didn't quite do enough to warrant a very expensive transfer.
Mm. But do people in other countries not spend so much time writing off other leagues as not being, only in the Premier League, etc.?
There is a little bit of that when a player comes from, I'm sorry, Jules, from France or from the Dutch league, which I disagree with. But yeah, there is always that question tag, you know, will they be able to be as good in La Liga? But it's not as accentuated as it is in Premier League.
Rafa, question from London 33R, just to finish off. What is Bayern's long-term plan when Sané, Gnabry and Coman are all fit? Could Sané ever find himself in the same situation he had at City, given Coman's form and Gnabry's as well being proven already?
It's a really good question. I mean, initially Sané was bought because Bayern didn't trust Kingsley Coman to play throughout the season without getting injured. He's been very, very susceptible and his form has suffered as a result. Now that he's fully fit, we've seen him, I think, go to a different level. The last few weeks, it's been absolutely outstanding. But Bayern, I think, know that these wingers tend to pick up injuries. Gnabry's had little injuries. Sané has had a big injury. Kingsley Coman has had a series of injuries. And that's why they brought in Douglas Costa as a fourth one to have that cover. So I don't think the question will ever really pose itself. Okay, theoretically, you could have the semi-final of the Champions League tomorrow and the three that you just mentioned are all fit. Who's going to play? That's an issue. But I think over the course of the season, it's probably not. And Bayern are happy that they're all there.
Well, I've been happy that you've all been here today. Alvaro, James, Rafa and Jules. Off you go then, listener. Enjoy your week. Enjoy that midweek action. And we'll catch up with you soon. For now, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
Muddy Knees Media.